Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Abraham Lincoln's religion. Welcome today to Dr. Bradley Hoke, who is a pediatrician, founded the Gettysburg Pediatrics, and is also a, I should say, full-time historian and a part-time pediatrician, because he's written two well-received and widely read books. One, Lincoln in Pennsylvania, and two, The Young Thaddeus Stevens, especially Stevens before he even moved to Lancaster, PA, or went to Washington. Today we talk about Mr. Lincoln's religion. He started out, did he not, as a typical frontier Baptist, that sort of thing that you'd expect people in the close to the wilderness to be?
Well, his family were Baptists, and they attended the Baptist church. I wouldn't say Lincoln was ever a Baptist. he certainly never joined that church, and there were times when he mocked some of the sermons that he heard, for which I believe his father punished him for doing that. Yes, for doing that. But he grew up in the Baptist church, but I can't say he was ever really a Baptist. I could say that there's a lot of evidence that he rebelled against that philosophy.
So much so that I understand from your work that some people thought that he was, in the terms of the day, an infidel when he was a young man.
In early life, yes.
That means something different today in the 21st century, but in those days it meant...
Well, especially
not religious,
right? Well, especially when he got to New Salem. You know, in New Salem, his friends remembered him as not believing in the authority of the Bible, not believing in the divinity of Jesus, not believing in the virgin birth, not believing in hell, not believing in the immortality of the soul. And it's said that he wrote a book, a small monograph on his beliefs, which was not acceptable that one of his friends burned the book. You know, if you think about Lincoln, I'm going to try not to cast my views on him, but Lincoln had a lot of trouble believing in redemption and in a personal, loving God. If you look at his relationship, for example, with his father, he did not have a good relationship with his father. And evidence of that is the fact that his father never met his wife, Mary. His father never met the grandchildren. And when his father died, Lincoln did not attend the funeral. Lincoln also did not have happy memories of women either, in the sense that, not that there was conflict, but people who were near and dear to him just seemed to die. His mother died when he was a young boy. His sister, who he was very close to, died in childbirth. And then he had a love interest, it's stated, Anne Rutledge in New Salem. She died. So Lincoln had a lot of problems believing in a loving God.
But the fact that you raise this this way, despite the fact that we don't have a lot of evidence of his own, he doesn't write an autobiography or a religious treatise, we do have the setting already. This response to traditional religion means there's a man of deep thought about religious questions. He may not right now want to answer them in the traditional 19th century frontier American way, but something's troubling him about, especially a search for a personal God.
I think he was a very intelligent seeker. He wanted to know answers to ultimate questions, and he kept seeking and seeking and seeking. What I'd like to say is that Lincoln was on a faith journey, and I think it's a journey that many of us make today. We seek to know the truth as best we can. And, of course, our views of what is truth change as our experience changes and as our age changes. Mm-hmm. I think Lincoln did the same thing.
There's a little element of, as a young man, he's sophisticated or tries to be. He's a little smart alecky about things. I mean, it's kind of like you and I were. Though I would never pretend that either of us could be a Lincoln. But, you know, the sort of thing where when you're young, things are more one-dimensional than they are often when you're older.
My father used to say, when you're young, you think you have the world by the tail.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what happens when we get older?
The world has you by the tail.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. As it did in Lincoln's case. Did he make a move after this kind of probing? Did he come to any kind of early conclusions?
Lincoln, early on, as a young man, in his 20s, was a man on the move, and he was on his way up. He entered New Salem as a subsistence agrarian laborer, and he left 7 years later as a state legislator elected and as an attorney. That's a remarkable transformation in 7 years, just remarkable. Mm-hmm. And during that time, he was reading a lot of Enlightenment writers. Another thing that happened to Lincoln, I believe, is that he was fascinated or enamored by the scientific movement, the scientific method, and I think he saw himself as one of the new breed, mm-hmm. Was interested in science, interested in truth, fact, and he gave some lectures on science and technology. He was the only president who ever held a patent for an invention that he made. And he came to believe in a doctrine which has been out of favor for a long time called the doctrine of necessity. And the doctrine of necessity was kind of a mechanistic doctrine that the world was created and had to function in a mechanistic fashion. There were only certain rules mm-hmm. and laws. Nowadays, we would say laws of physics, which was in its infancy in Lincoln's day, but rules, laws, there are only certain ways in which the world, the universe, had to function.
Yes.
It had to function. And being set up that way, then there was very little choice. Man had very little free will. There was very little choice, and there was not any existence of a creator force, a higher consciousness that interacted with man on a personal basis.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln, with that philosophy, came to believe in some later years, in his 40s and 50s, in a concept of providence. And that was a very nebulous concept that he put forth, at least in his own mind. Providence was perhaps a creator force, perhaps a higher consciousness, but certainly didn't interact with man,
mm-hmm.
didn't interact on a personal basis.
It was more than just a law
yes.
or a rule or a kind of a timepiece that you set in motion, and then it had a little something more substantial to it than necessity itself.
Right, right. Lincoln, in his campaign of 1846, said he discarded the doctrine of necessity several years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not that's true, we don't really know. But we do know that after the death of his first son, he became interested in a Springfield pastor who had written a fairly substantial book, hundreds of pages, on a rational view, a support system for Christianity. And Lincoln read that book, mm. and he had discussions with that individual.
Mm.
And when their first son, Eddie, died, they asked him to preach the funeral.
Uh-huh.
And later on, Mrs. Lincoln joined that church,
mm-hmm.
although Lincoln never did.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. She wrote, her husband was, Lincoln was riding the circuit
mm-hmm.
as an attorney, and Mary wrote him a letter which asked his permission to join that church. And Lincoln wrote her back saying that he thought religion was something that every woman should have.
Where do we get, what time in his life do we begin to see the man whom Reinhold Niebuhr and others have called America's greatest civic or civil theologian? Where does that come into being?
That,
after this phase, I presume.
That comes into being after this phase, but I think it can be dated with certainty from about 1862 on. So the last 3 years.
He's in his presidency.
Yes, he's in his presidency. Certainly not before that.
Is that right?
Do you see that? In 1862 and beyond. After the death of his son, Willie, mm-hmm. who died in February 1862, mm-hmm. perhaps... Well, there are various theories on why he died. Some people think it was typhoid fever. But after Willie died, Lincoln seems to have changed. Now, whether it was due to Willie's death or whether it was due to the ongoing deaths in the war.
Oh, yes. You'd think the two together would have a tremendous impact.
Yeah. And, you know, when he came to Gettysburg, he was still wearing a mourning band.
Yeah.
Which we understand was for Willie.
For Willie,
mm-hmm. yeah. But there is a document called the Meditation on the Divine Will, which was not named by Lincoln. It was named by one of his personal secretaries. Lincoln used to write things down and write them out and throw them in a drawer somewhere. mm-hmm. And his personal secretary found this document after Lincoln's death and named it Meditation on Divine Will and believed that it was written around September 1862. And in it, Lincoln said that... if God had wanted to prevent the war, he could have done so. If he had wanted to stop it, end it, he could have done so at any time. Yet the war continued.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a theme that that he wrote out privately mm-hmm. in 1862. But in 1864, there were... two letters to a widowed Quaker pastor named Eliza Gurney from Philadelphia, and in it he came across the same mm-hmm. theme. And then, of course, in his second inaugural address, he put forth the same
thing.
It's spelled out mm-hmm. in his second inaugural address, where Lincoln says that God has his own purposes, and that perhaps... God is on neither side, neither mm-hmm. on the side of the North nor on the side of the South.
Which Niebuhr says is far in advance of most theologians, if not all theologians and pastors of his day. They all tended to identify God with our cause, with our side.
Right. So that, once again, by 1862, Lincoln has come to the point of view of a God who interacts with man mm-hmm. on a personal basis. Mm-hmm. And we know that from the fact that after the Battle of Antietam in September 1862, there was a cabinet meeting.
Right.
And Zelman Chase and Gideon Welles, Chase was Secretary of Treasury, Welles was Secretary of the Navy, they both recorded the same or very similar words mm-hmm. from Lincoln in their diaries. And basically Lincoln said before... Lincoln was at that time trying to decide whether to issue the preliminary Emancipation right. Proclamation and then eventually the formal Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st, 1863. Anyhow, at that cabinet meeting, which occurred after the battle was over, Lincoln said that before the battle had occurred, when the enemy was still at Frederick, Maryland, that he had prayed to God, saying that if God gave the North the victory, he would see it as a sign that the slaves were to be emancipated. Lincoln said, "We gained the victory,
mm-hmm.
and it has been decided on the side of the slaves, and I am going to keep my promise. Mm-hmm. That's a paraphrase, yeah. But mm-hmm. but essentially, that's what Lincoln said. So there is evidence of Lincoln deciding, yeah. or at least he alleges that he decided mm-hmm. that God had made a decision, mm-hmm. that God had given the North the victory, and he was going to free the slaves.
Incidentally, it's interesting the way you phrase that, because it's not an if-then proposition like you see in some instances in the Bible and people run into all the time. If you give me the victory, then I will make a contribution to the cause or some such thing. In this case, he takes it as a sign that this is the way his will for humankind is to be interpreted. That's a much more advanced view than an if-then proposition.
Yeah. I have always been fascinated by the effect of Lincoln's religion on public policy during the Civil War. And, of course, one of the effects was on public policy toward the issue of slavery mm-hmm. that Lincoln alleges that he made that decision based on a prayer, almost prayer conversation. Mm-hmm. I believe it's some people would say God speaks and man listens. Well, in this case, Lincoln spoke, and God listens and then makes a choice, uh-huh, yeah. at least in Lincoln's
yeah.
mind.
Yeah, sure.
So in that sense, it had a profound effect on U.S. public policy, if Lincoln is to be believed, mm-hmm. At that cabinet meeting. Another way in which it had a profound effect on United States public policy is the continuation of the war, the unconditional surrender policy that Lincoln's administration had with regard to the South. Lincoln, of course, states it quite forthrightly in his first inaugural address. When he says to the South, when he directly addresses the South in his inaugural address, "You have no oath registered in heaven, mm-hmm. but I have the most solemn one, to preserve, protect, and defend mm-hmm. the Constitution of this nation." So he's phrasing his duty mm-hmm. as an oath registered in heaven. In mm-hmm. heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
The war continues. Now you have, by the end of the war, more than 600,000 deaths as a result of keep on fighting. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine mm-hmm. the weight of guilt yeah. on Lincoln's shoulders? Yeah. Can you imagine the stress? And of course, Lincoln could have ended the war at any time by just saying, "South, go away. Mm-hmm. We're going to stop this. We're done with this." Mm-hmm. Now, some people would say, well, easier said than done. Lincoln really didn't have the power to do that. Well, but that's exactly what the Democratic Party was saying
right,
should
exactly.
be done.
Right.
Just
mm-hmm.
let them go.
Let them go.
Just right. stop the war, mm-hmm. negotiate, end the mm-hmm. carnage, mm-hmm. end the fighting, end the dying, end the suffering. And so some people would say that Lincoln saw an inscrutable, mysterious God with his own purpose. And others might say that Lincoln needed an inscrutable, mm-hmm. mysterious God mm-hmm. with his own purpose. Hey, guys, it's not my fault. Mm-hmm. It's not my responsibility. Mm-hmm. God is continuing yeah, this. Yeah, God yeah, could end yeah, it yeah. at any time.
Yeah.
It's not me. So yeah. it some people see that as a way of that Lincoln had to lift some of the guilt off of his shoulders. Mm-hmm. Who knows if that's true or
it's
not.
It's probably the paradox with all great religious insight. There's always a paradox. And this paradox is something he works out in the second inaugural, in which you see a person who's not one-dimensional. God gave me this victory, or God is on our side. But the inscrutable will of God is to be seen on both sides.
Right.
And that maybe it was his will that it continue until, and then you get the famous phrases that the speech is known for.
Yeah. Reinhold Niebuhr said that Lincoln's brilliance was comprehending that at the same time that we affirm a meaningful history, we must understand that mankind, in a sense, creates a bias in the understanding mm-hmm. of that history, and that good and evil very often travel together.
Bradley Hoke is our guest today. Dr. Hoke is the author of two books, Lincoln in Pennsylvania and The Young Thaddeus Stevens, both of them available at Amazon.com or at your favorite bookstore. And by the way, the talk that we had today is reflected in an article that will appear very soon, if not already, in a book called Increased Devotion, related to the Gettysburg Battle and the new museum at Gettysburg. The article is entitled Abraham Lincoln, Reluctant Prophet. Dr. Hoke is also a pediatrician in his spare time, which is the way he makes his money and supports his family. But today we have talked to Dr. Bradley Hoke, his historian. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.